Major General Belchon, Real 3. You mentioned about night exercises. Did you do a lot of night work?
I wouldn't say a lot of night work, but it was in the experimental armored brigade period when this concept of night movement became important. It depends on, of course, how you define night movement. We were not training or attempting to train to fight at night. The idea was to use the darkness to move from A to B without the enemy knowing where you've gone. And this was very much coming into its own this time.
Did you develop that on the exercises itself, or had you worked with it previously in LID?
I don't think we'd done a great deal of it at LID. I think this was more more under the command of Sir Percy Hubbard, who developed increasingly this idea of movement by dark to avoid observation.
Were you instructed by Hubbard? Do you remember him?
I remember him, of course. I think if you talk of instruction, his instruction went to our superiors and came to us through them.
Do you remember seeing him on these exercises?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, very much so. And he had his own command tank, which was a very specially built one, and he was always very, very much to the fore.
What did you think of him at the time?
I think we all thought he was a man who was ahead of his time, and bearing in mind that we were, many of us at any rate, were avid readers of various books and pamphlets that had been written about the possibility of the future of armored warfare and so on, we saw in Hubbard the man who was developing this in the United Kingdom, and I think we're conscious that this was a novel development, which was truly a British Army one, because at that time we were the only people who were doing it. It's interesting that there was no Air Force working with us at that time, as far as I can remember.
You mentioned there that you read pamphlets and things. What were you actually reading? Do you remember?
I was trying to think of the names of some. Rowan Robinson is the one who stands particularly in my mind. I think there were others by... Oh dear. Broad, I think. He didn't write about it, he certainly talked quite a bit about it, General Ball, who was also another well-known tank regiment figure of his time.
Did you read The Purple Primer at this time, do you remember?
Yes, certainly.
And were you conscious that you were actually working on the basis of that? Would you say that?
Well, hopefully this was the sort of ambiance into which we were moving.
What sort of drill were you doing when you mentioned earlier on that you were doing drills, close order drill and things? What did that consist of?
Well, it was a mounted drill, if you're talking mounted drill. Obviously, there were a whole series of formations that were used in those days, mainly copied from the naval concept. There was from line ahead, or there was double line ahead, there was arrow ahead. That way. these are drill formations.
And what was the most effective, did you find, from the point of view of tanks?
Well, it depends entirely. If you were forced to go up a defile, you had to go in line ahead wherever you could, and bearing in mind the threat from the air, you opened out.
The line ahead one, what was the problems that you ran into?
It was line, of course, yeah. Straight line. Well, because you were one behind the other. If one got stuck, the rest couldn't get by.
And did you find that was happening?
Not frequently, because, of course, one wouldn't choose to go into line ahead unless this was the obvious way of doing it. There was another reason for line ahead, of course, and that was if you had an enemy sitting there and you wanted to do the maximum damage to him and the minimum to yourself, it paid you to go in line ahead, because you could all be shooting at him at the same time. Whereas if you went straight at him, it was 50-50 or worse.
And these sort of things you worked out down on the exercises?
Oh, yes, these were practiced all the time, yes, yes.
Did you at the end of the day come back and report in and discuss what you'd been doing?
No, I don't think so. I think these various drill formations were laid down automatically. We followed them as being part of the, just as an infantryman learns to form fours and turn to the right and so on and so forth.
Using wireless, or was it still?
Yes.
And was this effective?
Hubbard controlled the entire experimental brigade by radio, and indeed, in order to impress some of his visitors who came down to see these exercises, he used to hand over the microphone to them and invite them to get the feel of command of such an enormous force by radio.
Do you remember him doing this, do you?
I remember him inviting people to do this. I was not immediately concerned myself. No.
Who were some of these people? Were they War Office people? Were they?
Well, people coming down from the War Office, or visitors from wherever it might be that were invited, presumably ministers and so on, Minister of War.
Did he actually come and visit your particular section at all?
He, on maintenance days, he very often used the motor all round so that people could see him, and he could stop occasionally and ask people what they were doing and take an interest in it. Yes.
In the 1933 exercises, you did that with the Aldershot Command.
Yes.
What was your job?
We were we did a series of exercises in which our then called battalion of 50 tanks was allotted to a brigade or whatever it might be of one of the Aldershot divisions. A plan was made, an exercise if you like, which we had to carry out, be it in defence or in attack or normal military training. The idea being, of course, to get the infantry and tanks accustomed to working together.
Did you think this worked?
Frankly, I can't say that we found it terribly interesting, but I don't think that was the object. It wasn't so much to interest us as to get the chaps in the infantry to understand the implications of working with tanks.
Why didn't you find it interesting?
Frankly, I can't answer that question. It's too long ago. Probably because we didn't really get the close grips with the infantry. There were fears of running people over and so on and so forth, and I think we were more used in a mobile role, going from here and being there and being here, and it thus being assumed that if required under certain conditions, we were there for attack or defense or whatever.
Did you experience that you were, if you like, running rings around the infantry, that you were overpowering them?
At our level, we did not have that impression. Whether it existed at the higher levels, I have no idea.
But you weren't directly working with infantry alongside you, were you?
No, not as such. Not as such.
What equipment did you have at that time?
We were with Vickers Mark IIs, and I think we may have had one or two Mark IIIs, but otherwise cardinoids.
How did you find those Mark IIs, the Vickers?
Well, we'd had them all along, of course, so we knew the form perfectly all right, and as regards working with infantry, there was no problem. We had ample speed for that sort of operation.
What would you say would be the main sort of tactical instruction you've been given about working with infantry?
Well, at that stage, we'd not got as far as, shall we say, delivering an assault with tanks, carrying infantry on the engine decks and then letting them off to charge through, a sort of exercise we got used to in later years sometimes. I can't help you very much in the plans or the methods that were used to cooperate between infantry and tanks at that time, which perhaps shows that I was not particularly interested.
Would you say that you regarded yourselves, though, as kind of specialists in armour?
Well, nobody else knew anything about it, did they? I don't think we regarded ourselves as specialists any more than, shall we say, a gunner regards himself as a specialist. Except that we were something new, and therefore people were interested in seeing what we were up to and what we could do and where we could go and so on and so forth. But and to that extent, we were a picture of interest, if you like. But by no means everybody wished that they were one of us sitting inside.
Do you remember any incidents from this period? Anything that happened on those exercises?
At Aldershot? No, I don't. I don't remember anything about standing in that would stand out in my memory.
What was your
fairly short period anyway?
What was your opinion of the umpiring?
Again, the umpiring decisions would not have been given down to my level. Those would go not below the regiment or the squadron at the furthest. So how the umpiring was done, I don't know. But where were we?
We're talking about umpiring and incidents about that.
There were, of course, many stories current about unofficial assistance to umpires, for example, of wives following us in cars and telephoning from roadside phone boxes as to where we were and so on and so forth, in order to assist the other side in knowing where we were and from what direction we were coming and so on and so forth. I suppose one must, in fairness, say that such such stories can always be invented if they weren't true, but as a matter of fact, I think this did happen on certain occasions.
You don't remember any specific ones happening?
Not that it would be worth recording, perhaps.
You went to Cairo with the 6th Battalion. What was the training you were doing out there in the desert?
Well, normal military training. We were training for desert warfare. Now, this was done firstly with tactical exercises without troops, and it was done with tanks. And there, incidentally, also it was done at the Cairo higher command level with infantry. I can remember spending a fortnight in the on the Suez Canal area, actually training with infantry. This was quite interesting because they had not had previous experience of this sort of work with us. Moreover, they had not had previous experience of the desert mobility of light tanks. And I think that quite a lot was learnt about the problems of anti-tank defence of infantry columns wandering about on their own in the desert. Because every time they saw a tank, the artillery accompanying them had to stop, unlimber, and all the rest of it in order to engage us. And by that time, of course, we would have wiped most of them out, assuming we had come from the right direction. So that it was the main business in Cairo was desert training, and there was a, well, the bones of an armoured division there that eventually became the 7th Armoured Division. It was 6th RTR with the 7th Hussars and the 8th Hussars. One of them was in open Ford trucks for high mobility rather than in tanks. The other part of our training was incidental and to our peacetime role, and that was internal security, where part of the Cairo garrison was always at semi-readiness to go off and assist were there any troubles in any part of the Middle East, from Iraq to Cyprus and Palestine and the like.
To return to working with the infantry, as you mentioned, you actually worked in exercises alongside them.
In the desert, yes. And also to help us understand the infantryman's role, I remember, did a number of exercises with the Northumberland Fusiliers, where we, the tank people, went on foot as infantrymen and marched with them and so forth. A very uncomfortable position, I may say, for us, because we hadn't anywhere to carry things as we had in the tanks. The first thing that used to happen is they lost the greatcoat camel, and then come the night it was bloody cold. We did do exercises with them so that we knew their side of the story, if that's a way of putting it, quite apart from the fact that we did exercises in which we were, if you like, fighting against the infantry, or fighting against one another.
Who was developing the tactics then for all this? Who was out there?
Well, of course, I don't know at what stage Sir Percy Hubbard arrived in the desert. It must have been later than this. Prior to that time, it was done by the Moasca district staff that came under General Wavell.
But who was instructing you? Do you remember who was actually telling you what to do?
Well, again, at my rank, Lieutenant, the orders came down through the normal channels.
Did you find that the tactics and things being developed out there were very different from what was happening in England?
I think inevitably, because the nature of the country, you see, in England you had trees and hedges and all the rest of it. In the desert you find yourself in the wide open spaces, and to that extent, I think one must say there was a difference.
What specific sort of tactical things were you doing, you know, in out there in the desert?
Well, usually, of course, devolved itself either into locating the enemy and attacking him, or being sighted somewhere ready to defend oneself against him advancing in your direction. I think in simple terms that's the answer to your question.
What equipment did you have?
We by this time had Mark IIs, Vickers Mark IIs, and Mark III light tanks.
And were they effective for this sort of desert work?
Yes, for their time. They wouldn't have been in the event of an actual war, because these were later replaced by A9s, which was a different type of tank you've heard, I expect. And some of them even had mild steel sheets on the back and so forth. They were not war equipped. We were not action equipped at that time, but quite sufficient for internal security matters.
What was your main sort of mechanical problems that you encountered with them?
I don't know that we had any very specific mechanical problems in the desert days, providing you kept your air filters clean, which was always a bit of a problem, of course. But by and large, the track stood up to it well, and I don't think I would put my hand on any specific mechanical problem as such, bearing in mind the type of vehicle we were dealing with, which was a prototype for a real fighting tank when we got one. Moreover, of course, from a war point of view, they were grossly undergunned. They only had a 2-pounder.
Did you do much gunnery work out there?
Yes, we did annual gunnery practices in the ranges. Yes. But as you know, it wasn't until much later on that we eventually got 6-pounders and American 78mm and so on and so forth. Up to which time the gun and the Germans had us beat all along the line on the caliber of their equipment.
And the gunnery was on the move again in the desert, was it?
And we were over and over again attacking them, whereas the German tactics normally were to wait, as I have explained, and take us on a gun line.
You mentioned that you were doing internal security duties. Can you say something about that?
Yes, we our squadron went twice to Palestine in 36 and 38 to assist the civil power when there was trouble there, accompanied by infantry. This was a standard requirement of the British Armed Forces throughout the Empire in those days. when there was local trouble and police required assistance, the army, the nearest army central garrison, if you like, supplied the necessary.
And what was your duty as such? What were you doing?
Well, we were usually split up, of course, into small units. For example, we had in Palestine 36, we had a half squadron in Tulkarm and the other half squadron down in Gaza. And we had a few Air Force armored cars that used to work with us. The infantry were usually in companies or double company units in the more strategic areas from which they could operate, patrol and so forth. Most of our work, tank work, was done at night, patrolling the roads which otherwise used to be mined and so forth. And there was a lot of telephone line cutting and railway demolition work. And we did a lot to stop that or minimize it.
Did you run into incidents? Did you?
What sort of incidents?
Well, did you find that in the tanks they were effective for sort of this sort of civil duty?
I think they had an enormous moral effect, which was why we used to do. Why we used to do marches through Jaffa and marches through Jerusalem and so forth. And also we were effective in some cases in helping the infantry to seal off an area while they searched in the difficult country for these sort of marauding bands who they knew were hiding there but who had to be sniffed out somehow.
You were working with other arms at the time?
Yes, very much so.
Who in particular?
Well, for example, in Nablus we had a battery of mobile artillery that carried on mules that could go up the hillside. What do they call those things? I've forgotten now. We were always with infantry. We invariably were working with infantry. In Gaza, when I was in charge there, we had a half squadron of tanks, a company of infantry, some signalers to mend the telephone lines, and some sappers to look after the mines. We formed a composite little force.
And this was effective, was it?
As effective as anything can be under these conditions.